Seal off drafts, dust, and moisture with MD Weather Stripping from Menards. A well-sealed home is more comfortable and energy efficient. We have the largest selection of in-stock weather stripping with over 130 products available to take home and start lowering your energy bills today. Save big money on MD Weather Stripping right now at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Shop Macy's VIP sale going on now. Use your coupon or Macy's card and take an extra 30% off the latest fall trends from designers that rarely go on sale. And save 15% off skincare, makeup, fragrances, and more. Plus, shop fall specials for even more great deals on top brands at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
So I've been saying for quite a while now, you needed to wait till about 2 weeks after the debate and then see where everything was. And I was saying that before everything really went crazy. Let's just recap real quick where this race is, because in a lot of ways, we're right back where we started for the presidential race. So if you go back and listen and you really pay attention to the numbers here, there wasn't a big bump coming out of this debate. We're getting more and more polling now. And a lot of that plus five stuff for Harris doesn't look like it's holding up. It's back to being essentially tied. Now, I know national polling is showing Harris with a couple of point lead pretty uniformly across everybody. I'm going to repeat what I've been telling to anybody that will listen. I do it on commentary, whether I'm on TV, radio, whatever. National polling means absolutely nothing in this election. It means nothing. Ignore it. You can maybe get some trend line kind of applications out of it, but it just doesn't really matter. The battlegrounds matter. Remember, this is an electoral college election, not a popularity contest. And the seven battlegrounds are what matter, and they're all essentially tied. And right now, this race is tied. And there's two things we need to know about that race being tied that we should really pay attention to here. One is that Trump's ceiling is real. No matter what he does, his ceiling is a real thing, and it's a little bit less than it's been. Trump fatigue is a real thing. We are now in season 9 of the Trump show as a national political thing. And you can tell and you notice people are getting worn out. And it's not the partisans, not the Democrats and the Republicans or the MAGA people or the hardcore progressives. Those aren't the folks that are getting tired of it. Part of the problem with Donald Trump is you're not allowed to be neutral. Take the recent Taylor Swift smack. Most Taylor Swift fans probably don't care about politics one way or the other, but if you attack Taylor Swift directly, they're going to get involved. Trump, and especially his surrogates and the ecosystem of media that's friendly to him that has sprouted up, they don't give you an option. You're not allowed to be neutral. You're all for Trump or you're evil, wicked, communist, socialist, blah, 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 blah. Go right on down the line. You've all heard it. We've all seen it. Even if you agree with Trump on 90% of the issues, if you divulge off the reservation on any one little thing, they will come for you. MAGA and the current generation of the Republican Party does not do a good job of tolerating dissent. And part of the problem with that is when you get people that aren't super political, like moderates, like independent voters that swing elections, if you put their back against the wall, they're probably not going to go for you. They're going to go for whatever's against you, whether they like it or not, just out of spite. So the Trump ceiling, polling-wise at least, is very real. That brings us to Vice President Kamala Harris, though. She's underperforming. I'll say that again because some people in the back seem to be having problems with it. She's underperforming. She's underperforming what Joe Biden did previously. She's underperforming what a generic Democrat would do. And I know that I always ran about that number not meaning anything, but here there's a little bit of an application. She's underperforming. Now, she appears to be doing much better because of the circumstances involved. One of our core principles in doing these programs is things don't happen in a vacuum. They happen in a sequence. What's the sequence of events? Kamala Harris in the 2020 election didn't even get into the calendar year of the election she was seeking to win. Remember, it wasn't Republican voters that rejected her. It was Democratic primary voters and fundraising and donors and pundits and the people that make those decisions in the Democratic Party that found her wanting. Now, she became the vice president and has done, you know, you can think what you want about the job she's done since then. And now she's the nominee. She's the nominee because Joe Biden had a catastrophic failure on live national television. That failure brought out a lot of the things people had worried about Joe Biden for a long time, going all the way back to the 2020 election, really. And some of the reasons that, and I was wrong about this, I didn't think he should have ran for president in the first place. Now, he ended up winning, but there was concerns about his age and things like that. And when we had the debate meltdown, it all came to a head. What happened with the Democratic Party was they went from utter despair and doom of Trump's going to win no matter what. Then Biden steps aside, Kamala Harris comes in, and now you went from doom to hope. So your viewpoint got skewed a little bit on how excited you are about the candidate. Now, to her credit, Kamala Harris has done what she should do as the Democratic nominee in such a circumstance. She has consolidated the Democratic base, the Biden coalition, if you will, previously that got him the other. Most of those people have come home to the Democratic Party now. But that's why this race is tied. Trump has a hard ceiling, and Kamala Harris has not sealed the deal with any voters outside of that base. Now, there's other commentary and there's other things you can pick from it, but that's the race right now. It's essentially tied. Now, there's seven swing states. Trump has an advantage here, and I still think he's the favorite to win this, not because he's doing a great job. He's not. He's running a horrible campaign. His debate performance was terrible. J.D. Vance is an embarrassment, and he's not getting anybody outside of his own base. And in fact, a lot of the stuff they're doubling and tripling down on is going to further alienate any voter that wouldn't come from him. But Kamala Harris's job is not just to be not Trump. She has to get the people who were going to not vote to come out and vote. Just sitting at home isn't good enough for her because of the way the Electoral College works. And that's why I think Trump's still the favorite in this race as it sits today, the third week of September. There's those seven swing states we talked about, the battleground states. Kamala Harris has to win probably five or six of them at least. Trump could probably win as few as three or four of them and still win the presidency. So he's the favorite. Now look at states like Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin. These are going to be really, really tough competitive races. Pennsylvania is virtually tied by any measure you could tell. There's some pie in the sky stuff where folks are talking about maybe Kamala Harris can get North Carolina. Mathematically, yes. Mark Robinson's top of the governor ticket. He might drag that ticket down a little bit with some of his buffoonery. But I think North Carolina might be a bit of a stretch. Now, if she wins North Carolina, she's probably going to be president because that means she's getting a little bit more of a push than just a tied election and breaks either way to pull a state like that. But those seven battleground states is what you need to pay attention to. Turn out the noise of these news cycles going into these last 50-some-odd days of this race. This is where we're at. The battleground polling and the battleground states is what you pay attention to. Not the national. The national is going to bounce around. That's the popularity contest. It's the Electoral College that's going to put somebody in the White House, either Donald Trump or Vice President Kamala Harris. So pay attention to that. But those are the two factors as I see them, just calling it as I see it. Trump is hitting his ceiling, which we knew he would do because his base is going to come out. And Kamala Harris is currently underperforming a little bit. Now, she can turn that underperforming to a winning ticket by convincing those independents and moderates and the undecided voters to come out and vote for her, or the disaffected Trump voters, or whatever you want to call the people in the middle. Remember, the turnout here is going to be very, very interesting. Joe Biden had the highest vote total in the history of America. Is Kamala Harris going to be able to replicate that or better it? Trump had the highest voter total he ever has. He vastly improved on 2016 and 2020. Is he going to increase his lead? These are things we're going to have to see. These are numbers to watch, not just the polling numbers and the averages. That's where this is going to be decided. So the seven key battleground states, watch that. Pay attention to the two candidates, where they're campaigning, where they're putting their efforts in. And then we'll see if there's going to be any more debates or not. Time's ticking. Time's running out. And then underneath all this, of course, we know just because we have an election day doesn't mean the election's over on that day. So pay close attention to things going on, especially in states like Georgia that decided the last election. And we know all the shenanigans that went on down there. They're going to be doing that stuff again. Pay attention to places like Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, because we're probably going to hear about this long after Election Day. Let's talk about this Mark Robinson situation. For the uninitiated, Mark Robinson is the lieutenant governor of the great state of North Carolina. That's his first elected office. He rose to prominence on a viral video a few years back where he spoke at a meeting where he took up a fiery defense of the Second Amendment of all things. He's a very charismatic speaker in his own way. He has a lot of, you know, personal charisma in a room. He's a large personality. He's a large guy. You can see on video where he can get a crowd and grab a crowd and get attention. Problem is, once you get past that and the buzzwords and all the sloganeering that he has adapted for his political persona, there's a lot of really problematic stuff in his background. This was all known. It was very open stuff on things like Facebook accounts and other social media. His problem was saying things that are really bad, really questionable, and really tell a lot about the man's character was all out there. But because, like a lot of other people, he put on the trappings of the modern Trump movement, the MAGA wing of the GOP, he shot to stardom and he won the lieutenant governor's race. Now he's running for governor against Josh Stein, who's the sitting attorney general, Roy Cooper being term limited. Now that's the background. So there's been a little bit of a drip, drip, drip of all this past stuff that he said in the past, and it's not good stuff. He said anti-Semitic things. He has said things in church settings that come off very fiery preacher-like, but if you're not from that background, you can immediately go, yeah, you shouldn't say stuff like that. He said things like, some folks just need killing. Well, yeah, there's some very specific situations where that may be true, but a politician talking about political opponents, that's probably not a way to do it. He's also gone hard into the culture war stuff, especially things like transgender issues, things like this. So that all brings us up to the modern story and what started breaking from a story on CNN. But the core value of our program is things don't happen in a vacuum. They happen in a sequence. The sequence of events of how this story came out is very important. We now know that CNN, K-File, Andrew Jasinski, they had been working on this story for a while. They had informed Mark Robinson, at least his campaign or his surrogates, that they were going to go public with this story and wanted his comment. They would give him 48 hours, a couple days before it actually came out. Mark Robinson kind of ignored him on it, and then the day it comes out, he agreed to do a sit-down pre-taped interview, which came out as part of the rollout package on this piece. So here's how this works. CNN, everybody knew this story was coming out. Conservative media in North Carolina started trying to get in front of it by posting their own stories about it, places like the Carolina Journal, which is a conservative publication. Full disclosure, I have friends there. I think they do good work. I've appeared on a couple podcasts with them a couple of years ago. They're, you know, they probably vote for Trump, but they're not super Trumpy. They're a little bit more moderate. They're pretty down the middle on the old conservative movement, what it used to mean. So when they ran a piece early in the afternoon about what was coming out from Mark Robinson, that should have told you something, because that's conservative media trying to get ahead of what was coming. They knew. And they also knew that some of this stuff was out there. The rumors and innuendos been out there for a while. They just didn't know the specifics of this particular story. So sure enough, come about 3:30, CNN releases it online, and then Jake Tapper leads off the 4 o'clock block of his program with it. So you leak it online, you get the buzz going, then you do the segment. The segment did include Mark Robinson's comments, and he also put out a comment online where he denied everything, said he didn't do it. And then in his pre-tape, he talked about how, well, there's things like AI, we don't know how people do this. Look, K-File that put this out, and somebody else also helped with the writing, but that's somebody who's, you know, pretty well respected across the board. They didn't just make this up. They got it from somewhere. They investigated it. They've matched up the screen names and all this stuff. Yes, Mark Robinson did this. He is not a victim here. It is really grotesque stuff. I'm not going to repeat it here. You can go find it on your own. It was a message board for a porn site and not a name brand porn site. It was a very specific porn site that had a lot of really dark, nasty, ugly stuff on it. The point of the story, it's not just the stuff that Mark Robinson said, although it's vile, disgusting, and should have been disqualifying, but he said a lot of disqualifying things, and people just plowed ahead anyway. Once again, things don't happen in a vacuum. Once again, sequence of events. Why is this coming out now? Because here's the truth. He was already losing to Josh Stein. He's going to lose this election badly. He may lose it by double digits, and that's before this came out. So why is this coming out? Well, there's a couple reasons. One is people want Mark Robinson to not get an elected office as a governor, lieutenant governor. He can only do so much damage. There's also some reports out there you can chase down where Roy Cooper may or may not have told the Kamala Harris campaign he didn't want to be considered for VP because he didn't want to be out of the state where Mark Robinson could run rampant with some shenanigans. This story is very interesting because when you have the conservative movement going after Robinson, what does that tell you? This is more than just a 2024 election story. There's stuff going on behind the scenes here. You'll notice also in a day that somebody on Twitter, and I would credit them, but I didn't ask permission, so I won't name them, named that this particular news cycle between Mark Robinson and Matt Gaetz having some more stuff come out about some of his alleged activities. It was too much information day online. This is not accidental stuff. As this election starts to approach, understand that the real power plays aren't just looking at 2024. They're already looking ahead to 2026. 2028. So there are people in the Republican Party who know that right now, before this election, they have an opportunity to do a little bit of house cleaning before you go into the midterms of 2026 and the next presidential cycle in 2028. Because remember, even if Trump gets elected, he can't run again. He'll probably try, but he can't run again. He's a lame duck the second he gets in there, and the next election starts the moment this one ends, which should be election day, but it will probably be a week or two after by the time we litigate it all to pieces. So underneath this Mark Robinson story, I want you to do something with the news coming up. Pay attention to how people are reacting on this. There's a little bit of cleaning house and a little bit of power struggle and a little bit of maneuvering going on here that goes beyond this election. Mark Robinson was already losing it, and he's blaming the Josh Stein campaign and the liberal media and all that. I'm telling you, a lot of this stuff's coming from conservative and GOP circles. They want people like Mark Robinson out of the way. Keep an eye on this sort of thing. You're going to see more and more of it, especially if the GOP loses the House. The establishment Republicans, the more traditional ones, they are just itching to start blaming some of these really crazy MAGA candidates, rightfully so, by the way, for losing the majority and for having a thin majority to start with and for losing the presidential election and losing some winnable Senate seats. How you doing, Carrie Lake? You're blowing Arizona. If you elect these really bad candidates, and they did it again in 2020, Mehmet Oz, remember Dr. Oz ran from the, remember the nut job in Pennsylvania? Yeah, you can't just run bad candidates. And the real power players in the GOP who know how these things work, look at people like Mark Robinson, look at them already losing, understanding that election is over. And now they've decided maybe it's time to put a headshot into some of these people and make sure that they don't come back politically ever again. That's why you're going to start seeing some airing of dirty laundry, and it's not all going to be coming from the left. Some of it's going to be friendly fire. It will be leaked to the liberal media, in their terminology, for the cover of it, and people will even try to position Trump to be against some of these people because that's how you really get them to be kind of banished into the neither regions. These are the machinations you pay attention to with the headlines. It's not just what you're seeing. It's why you're seeing it, when you're seeing it, and who's presenting it that way for you to see it that way. There's no such thing as a leak, folks. People didn't leak anything here. People sent this information to CNN and K-File and to the Carolina Journal and other places because they want it out there. One of the things about being a discerning news consumer is start figuring out those sorts of things. So when the news story breaks that something got leaked, find out who leaked it, why, and who benefits from it, and then you start figuring out what's really going on with it. A lot of this 2024 election is going to be ugly, and it's going to be a lot of interpersonal warfare of people that don't like each other, not just the politics. Mark Robinson is a very bad person. He's unfit for office. I hope he doesn't win. But also, there's a lot of politics involved. The NCGOP came out and supported him despite this, even though there's people in the NCGOP that are actively trying to make it happen, that he loses. Ain't politics fun? So I think what would be helpful as we try to, you know, do some analysis on where we're at in this election and beyond, let's get rid of the term low information voter. Now, we've heard it a lot over the last few years. It actually came from a book back in 1991. A guy named Samuel Popick coined it going into the Clinton Bush, that'd be H.W. Bush for you area Utes, election. And it got into things like the fact that Bill Clinton would go to McDonald's and get a, you know, burger and fries and whatever while he's out jogging, things like this that were made fun of and parodied at the time. But that connected with voters, and he tried to put it into kind of a, you know, social, political, philosophical, psychological thing to explain this phenomenon. My dad had a term for this too. He said most people vote for their party, and then the rest of people just vote for who they'd rather see on their TV for the next 4 years for president. And while he's being a little bit glib, having taught social studies for the better part of 35 years, there's a little bit of truth to that. And it kind of goes to where this low information voter thing comes. Think of that very election, if you will. George H.W. Bush, whatever you thought of his politics, was probably one of the most qualified presidents we ever had. He was a war hero. He had ran the CIA. He had been vice president for 8 years. He'd been in Congress. He was very qualified as far as the job description, if you're going to do a CV for president, to be president. And he was the incumbent president. He was also old and elitist, a little bit out of touch. You remember the jug of milk thing? If you don't know what that is, go look it up. Made him look a little bad. And there was a bit of a culture and generational shift going on. He was, in effect, a third term of the Reagan administration. And people were ready for change. And Bill Clinton looked like the bright young thing coming out. He was folksy. He talked differently. And this was really the high point of TV news, where they just absolutely drooled all over themselves over Bill Clinton. And he won. And then he got a Republican Congress, and we know the rest. Of course, we didn't know all his personal foibles. It took the internet getting big a few years later to find out that he had all sorts of bad things in his personal life. But the point is, when this was coined, it had some validity to it. And if you take it in a vacuum, it still has validity to it. Low information voters, voters who don't get as much information as other people are. Because here's the truth. The more information you have means the more you're politically into this stuff. You're one of the sickos that just follow it all the time, like me. And if you're watching this program, that's probably you too, because you want to learn about culture and politics. Hopefully you like our style of doing it, where we turn down the noise. But nevertheless, you're probably in the very minority of people in America just by watching this program, or if you're listening on the podcast, or if you're reading on the Substack. You're already in the minority. And that's where this gets really tricky. But are the low information voters a minority to start with? Now, the other thing that happens with this is talking heads will say up and down, especially the politicals, like, well, it's not really a pejorative. It's not a bad thing to say low information voters. This is why I think we need to get rid of the term, though, because here's where this leads almost every single time with the politics and the punditry and everything else. In political psychology, there's this thing called right voting. And the theory of it goes, if everybody gets the right amount of information, they will make the right decision. Problem, of course, in politics is that's subjective. So there's really no way to do low information voters without people going, well, if they just knew all the facts, they would vote exactly like I think they need to vote because all the facts point to me being right. And it's really, really hard against human nature for people to steer away from that. So that's one reason we should get rid of it. The other reason we should probably get rid of this term is because it does turn into a pejorative like that. It becomes a bad thing. Are low information voters bad people for being low information? And they're not. They're just busy. We have this joke about Twitter not being real life or social media not being real life. I say that a lot. I use that a lot. But remember, to a lot of Americans, politics isn't real life. It's just something they do every so often. They'll go, they'll vote, they'll move along, and they complain about whoever's in office because that's their God-given right as an American to complain about their government. And that's the extent that they think about politics. They don't do it 24 hours a day. They don't do the news cycle all the time. When it applies to them or something big happens in the world, they tune in. Otherwise, they're busy living their lives. They're raising their children. They're going about their jobs. They're going about their passions and their hobbies. They're just out living their life. That doesn't make them bad people. It also doesn't make them dumb people or stupid people, which is where low information voters go to a lot of the times. That political theory thing we talked about right voting, if you have the right information, well, there's nothing wrong with not caring. Oh, I know. Here's the problem. In the modern political world, people have made everything Armageddon. If you don't vote for my candidate, the world will end. Your candidate is literally Hitler. Your candidate is literally Stalin. You're a communist. You're a fascist. On and on. Everybody goes right to the bone on all this stuff constantly. And yes, there is some really important stuff in our elections, but we overblow it because that's how you get content and clicks and reads and views and ratings. The media, the news media, social media, all media, you have to up the ante over and over and over again. The problem is the ante is only getting upped and upped for that very small majority that eats that up all the time. So now, not only are low information voters not the majority of people that follow politics, there's a huge gulf between the people that follow politics and what we are calling low information voters. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. They're outliving their lives. Now, the politicos will scream and pound their chests and go, well, they must care as much as I care. That's probably a good way to get them not to listen to you. Here's the other part of this low information thing, why you need to get rid of it. When we're trying to analyze what's going on in politics, which is really hard. One thing I've started trying to do really, really hard is to put aside what I think and put aside my own priors and biases, which I have and I'm open about, and think about this from the point of view of what used to be called low information voters, because they're not really low information voters. They have exactly as much information as they want. See, the truth is with technology, you have all the information you want anytime you want it. These things right here, cell phones for the podcasting audience that can't see me holding up my cell phone, this means you have the entire depth and breadth of human history and knowledge in the palm of your hand, and with just a couple of pushes of buttons, or in modern age, you can just push a button and ask it to tell you something, and you can find out anything you want to know within a couple of seconds. That's the reality we live in. The thing about the news media now that it applies to low information voters and means that we should just get rid of this term altogether is, people have exactly as much information as they want. Let me say that one more time for the folks in the back from Webster County. People have all the information they want. That's just the reality. Information and news media now is a la carte. You can go through your life hearing only exactly what you want to hear. You can just do affirmation all the time and not worry about information. Now, I worry about information, and if you're an audience member of this program and a supporter and somebody that listens to us all the time, so are you, because you wouldn't listen to us otherwise, because I'm probably going to step on your toes with your priors a lot, because I don't care about your political party. I really don't. I want it to be a healthy party that wants the best for the country and all people, and we can disagree how we get there, but I don't care whether it wins or not or grows or not. I care about the country. I care about people. I don't care about the right. I care about getting it right. These things are hard, and that is a rabbit hole you wind up going down when you don't think about these things the way what we used to call the low information voters do. They got the exact information they want, and politicos, people like me, I'll hold my hand up too, we're even worse because we get the information we want. So unless you make a concerted effort to challenge your own information intake, you're going to wind up being in that minority who wonders why they don't have the quote unquote right information to make the right decision, because they don't care as much as you do. That's a tough spot to be in life. Think about that in a relationship, whether it's a parent-child, a romantic relationship, a business relationship, relationship with your boss. That's tough. A lot of people are applying that to their politics now. If somebody doesn't care as much as you do about a certain issue or a certain candidate, well, there must be something wrong with them. They must be a bad person. And that just ain't so. This low information voter term really needs to go away for all the reasons we just talked about. But among all the others is the word politics, which literally comes from the term affairs of the city or affairs of the state. You're supposed to convince people. Another one of those things my dad always said, and I think he was right about it. Good leadership is getting people to do stuff. Great leadership is getting them to be happy about doing it. Fantastic leadership is getting them to think it was their idea in the first place. Politics is always supposed to be about convincing people. Now, in our modern age, it's all about the power and making people do stuff. And that's the trap of using low information voters, because now they are less than you and you need to go make them do something. And you cannot. You have to persuade people. Let's be honest about one thing when it comes to voters, low information or otherwise, and hopefully we can get rid of this term and get a better one. If your candidate can't convince people to vote for them, that's not the voter's fault. That's the candidate's fault. Because good leadership is getting people to do stuff. Great leaderships, getting them to be happy about it. Great political leaderships, getting them to think it was their idea to put you in charge in the first place. Now, we don't get those kind of politicians very often. That's probably why we're getting a string of one-term presidents going. But just consider, when somebody's saying low-information voters, what they're really telling you is something about how they see voters that doesn't agree with them. We need a better term for that, because the idea is to convince people, not make them do things. Otherwise, we've stopped being a representative democracy. And then we start turning into those other things that we accuse people of being, and we should never be in real life. You might have heard tell that Congress has decided to actually do a continuing resolution to end the year. That's the spending bill. That's the one that replaces the normal budgeting we're supposed to be doing, but apparently can't do anymore. And it's a short-term continuing resolution, or CR, short-term CR, through December 20th. Now, for you math majors and calendar watchers, yes, that means that'll be after the election and during the lame duck session before the new year, which means we're going to have a new president, we're going to have a lot of new House members, going to have a lot of new senators, and we don't know what the balance of power is going to be. There's going to be another lame duck session CR fix, which means omnibus time, everybody. Everybody loves a good omnibus. Now, the problem with this, of course, is Speaker Johnson, when he got the job last year after they got rid of Kevin McCarthy, stood at the podium and said, "I am done with short-term CRs." That's on video. You can look it up right now. He said it. And it was a stupid thing to say, because the way the House is currently constituted, this was probably the inevitable conclusion. He has a raucous caucus that he can't control. He was a consensus. We got to get somebody in their candidate in the first place. And everything the House GOP does is inevitably tied to Donald Trump and whatever whim strikes him at the moment. So especially in a presidential election year with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket, this was probably inevitable. So now they've done the CR and the Senate's going to fast track it. And sometime here soon, they're going to be done with Congress until after the election. They're going to close up shop and go to the House. Not really the House. They got to go campaign, because the House is very much in doubt of who's going to control it, the Democrats or the Republicans. And then they'll come back and they'll pass an omnibus going into the next year. And then we'll start the cycle all over again. Congress is supposed to be doing the financial health of our country, but it's far more than that. It's not just the fact that they can't do things like balance budgets and regular funding and regular spending and just put through regular appropriations bills. Or as my friend Eric Garcia always explains, especially in the Senate, there's senators and then there's appropriators, and there's two different things there. Here's the thing. Congress is at the heart of a lot of our political problems right now. Everybody's complaining about the Supreme Court over and over and again, and there's a lot to like, dislike, pick apart, argue about, and discuss in the Roberts Court of the Roberts era. But if there's a theme to the Roberts Court, it's actually not a political one. If you go through and read just about everything, the theme of the Roberts Court, according to Roberts and the court, is Congress ought to be handling this. Again and again and again in these Supreme Court rulings, you see them saying Congress is supposed to handle this. Congress should do this. Congress should do this. Congress ain't doing this, and thus we're forced to do X, Y, and Z. And we can argue all that some other time, but that's just the fact of the matter. What about the presidency? Well, the presidency has way overstepped executive authority in this country over and over again, and the Supreme Court's had to step in and knock them down once in a while. You know who else is supposed to be reining in the executive branch? Congress. They don't like to do that, because right now you got Republicans trying to get a Republican presidential candidate in and a Democratic caucus that's trying to get a Democratic candidate in, and those things end up getting streamlined, tied together, instead of being oversight and reflection and being a counterbalance. And you get what we got now, a hot mess. It's very interesting. If you look historically, there's usually been pretty healthy margins in the House, especially, and also in the Senate. But there'd be swings back and forth every now and then. Now, the Republicans lost the House for a long time. You go back, and then you remember Newt Gingrich era. Of course, that ended in a total disaster. And the Bill Clinton era, where you had Bill Clinton as president and Republican Congress, and they all worked together because Clinton was smart enough to look like, hey, they can do it. They can get all the blame. I'll take all the credit, and we'll go about our happy business. And that's what happened, of course, until they impeached him for fobbles. And then again, the Republicans can't really brag about that impeachment too much. They had to go through three speakers of the House just to get that done, and then they failed anyway. Fast forward to the modern era. It's almost become a habit now, whether it was Obama or Trump or Biden, you come into office, you get a little bit of a majority, and then you get like one major piece of legislation that you can throw through the Congress before it gets changed up during the midterm elections. I suspect that's about to happen again, but we'll see what happens. But Congress is at the root of a lot of this hot mess. There's a reason Article 1 of the Constitution is all about Congress. All legislative powers is supposed to be with the Congress, and all the power of the purse is supposed to go through Congress. So if you're going to complain about the financial situation in our country, you got to start with Congress. You want to talk about how bills are and are not getting passed, you got to talk about Congress. Now, that was a lot of runway to get airborne with the main point of what the problem with Congress is. Congress is also the branch of the federal government. We, you, me, voters, have the most control over. So if it's the hot mess of government, the blame really needs to start with us finding a mirror and trying to figure out why we tolerate this nonsense. Every member of the House of Representatives is up for election every 2 years. Functionally, what that means is they're really legislating for about 6 to 9 months, and then the rest of the time they're either getting settled in and jockeying for committee assignments and that sort of thing, or they're running for re-election. That cuts down on the time they're actually getting anything done. Now, we can argue about their term limits and things like that later. That's the reality of the thing. The entire House of Representatives every 2 years is up for votes. The Senate, roughly about a third of it every 2 years, since they have 6 year terms. So especially the House of Representatives, we have tremendous control over it. And yet, up until recent times, most of us, the voters, exercised very little control. Incumbency was a very powerful thing. Now, of course, that has built-in advantages electorally, and we can talk about gerrymandering and redistricting some other time, that once you get in power, you can start fiddling with it to try to maintain and keep that power. But there's also been big swings in population changes, and the Sun Belt has become much more powerful than the Rust Belt politically, and on and on go down the line. But the point to be made is Congress is representative part of our representative government. And if it's a hot mess, and it is, it's an embarrassing mess. We can't even pass budgets. We can't pass legislation. Everything is tied up to whatever's going viral at the moment. The Republican Congress of the last 2 years has been an utter embarrassment. They've gotten nothing of note accomplished whatsoever. They can't even get basic procedural votes to go through as of late. It's rather embarrassing if you actually paid attention to it, but most people don't, because the presidential election gets all the headlines. Congress, the Senate, the House of Representatives, this is something we should be paying a lot of attention for. And if we're going to have accountable government, it better start with us keeping those folks that we have the most direct accountability to by way of voting on them frequently. That's the only way you hold these people accountable. And we're not doing it. So before you complain about Congress, just understand that's the branch of government we have a whole lot of control over. And we are failing to exercise that control. And if you are enabling, then you got to take a little bit of the blame. All of us do. I do. You do. Congress is something that is very, very finicky and touchy. If we made more noise, if you used your social media for something other than just sending cat pictures to each other and screaming about DC, you can get a hold of a congressman pretty easily. You can get a hold of their office. You can stir them up a little bit. You can get your friends to start doing social media posts. Are you? Or do you only do that if you're politically active to toe the party line on whatever they want and your favorite candidate wants? See, those are two different things. Activity is not always accomplishment. Of course, the problem with our Congress right now is we're not getting activity or accomplishment. We're just getting a big, hot, steaming mess of embarrassment, and they're not doing anything. Now, gridlock may be better than what they would be doing, but this isn't the way it should work. The greatest experiment of a group of people self-governing in the history of the world, which is what America is, ought to be doing a whole lot better with that, or we deserve exactly what we get. We're getting it good and hard right now. Probably heard tell that there's been a lot of political endorsements all of a sudden. We do this every election season. Do they matter? Do they not? It used to matter a lot. Every local paper, regional paper, the New York Times, whoever, would do their big endorsement list, and that was a big deal. Big organizations like labor unions would give out their endorsements, and that was a big deal. This group and that group would all do their endorsements, and those things would really matter. Do they still matter? Well, sometimes they do. It's undisputed in the 2020 election, Joe Biden was dead in the water in the primary until he went to South Carolina and influential Congressman Jim Clyburn endorsed him. And that was a big deal. And of course, Joe Biden went on to win South Carolina and wrapped that puppy up in about 3 weeks after that and went on to become president. That endorsement mattered a lot. It went to a very key base, the black vote, which has always been very important to the Democratic base, and that Joe Biden's usually done very well in, and in fact, did extremely well in the general election with. So that endorsement mattered. there was a lot of talk back during Barack Obama's rise when he initially went against Hillary Clinton and he appeared on Oprah. And a lot of people thought the Oprah endorsement might have mattered quite a bit. It's hard to quantify those things, but who knows? That was a little bit different time. In the modern era, it doesn't really matter, though. We just saw the Teamster Union kind of came apart publicly, at least, having a little fit where they weren't going to endorse anybody. One of their main leaders spoke at the RNC, but then a lot of their regional and local offices came out and supported Kamala Harris. Traditionally, a labor union would go for a Democratic candidate, but Trump has really ate into a lot of blue-collar workers and union workers in his various runs for the White House. So things aren't the way they used to be in that way anymore. That same 2020 primary season also gave us one of the best examples of why endorsements probably need to at least evolve, if not go away completely. The New York Times editorial board absolutely beclowned themselves by putting on a multi-part TV series where they sat around a big conference room in a glass room on the side of their building in downtown New York and interviewed all the primary candidates. And it was utterly embarrassing. Because what they ended up doing was having a split thing where they couldn't make their mind up between Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren, both respectively U.S. senators at the time. So they said, may the best woman win. And they were upstaged by their own production because Joe Biden came in and the security lady in the elevator in a 90-second clip just said, oh, I just love you. And he took a selfie with her. And it was the viral moment of that entire thing. It went so badly and they got so roundly mocked for it that this year, 2024, the New York Times announced they're going to stop endorsing people altogether. And, you know, they need content, so it's amazing they wouldn't do it, but they can't even figure it out. And they've been doing it for 160 years. Maybe endorsements just need to go away, but they won't because we like to endorse things. And there is value in people of note saying what they believe and who they believe would be the best candidate for this and that office, especially when it comes to a presidency. But part of the presidency endorsement problem is when you don't have great candidates, is a celebrity really going to lay it out on the line for them? The answer apparently is yes. They just keep doing it. And now we have things like Donald Trump feuding with Taylor Swift and people wondering if that's going to matter. Well, it might. Taylor Swift has a very important fan base that's very dedicated to her. Trust me, I'm a four-time girl dad. I know the power of the Swifties. But is that going to quantify itself in votes? Well, it might, and these elections are tight. Remember, 2020 and 2016 were decided by 80,000 and 40,000 votes in the swing states, respectively. That's all it takes. So a couple thousand votes because Donald Trump doesn't like Wildest Dreams, which is the best Taylor Swift song in my humble but accurate opinion, could happen. Let me tell you the endorsements that don't matter because we're seeing a whole lot of them on social media right now. It's almost a cut-and-paste Mad Lib thing. X amount of X people endorse X candidate. Well, what does that tell you? Well, if they have to lump them together like your insurance company or the cable company creating a bundle to give you a bunch of stuff you don't want to drive the price up to get the price they need to make you buy it, then no, it doesn't really matter. Here's the tell. If they're just giving you a big number of group of people and not telling you an individual name because an individual name would actually carry an endorsement weight if you knew that name, and they don't have it, so they're not using it. So that tells you that endorsement probably doesn't matter. I'm sorry. I know that'll probably hurt somebody's feelings, but that's just the way it is. If it was something that mattered, they'd lead off with the name. They'd say so-and-so that everybody thinks is super swell and really plugged in says you should do this, then you consider it. When they don't do that, you know, it's not really that big a deal. Here's one of the main reasons, though, that these endorsements have lost a lot of their luster. In the social media age, though, there's no ambiguity where people are anymore. You already know where your reporters and talking heads on TV. You already know most of your celebrities and people that you know of from a fame point of view. If you follow them on social media for even a little bit or just Google their names, you're probably going to find out their politics pretty quick, especially in the modern age where people can blend politics and their own personal branding and make money that way. There's just no mystery to it. So there's no pop to it. There's no shock value when somebody comes out and endorses because you already pretty much knew. Now, that doesn't mean endorsements don't have any say. Now, locally, state elections, there's still probably plenty of endorsements that would matter. But for a presidential election, this might be one of the casualties of everything being national now. Almost all news has gone national to the point where people are kind of getting monotoned with it because it just becomes a big white noise blob coming at folks. They hear about national news all the time from everybody, celebrities, the people they know, people they don't know, your friends on Facebook, your followers on Twitter, the stories you follow on Instagram. Politics has invaded everything. So the idea that you don't know somebody's politics probably isn't just true anymore. It's just the way the world's worked. So Sammy Davis Jr. coming out and endorsing Nixon probably shocked and surprised some people. Oprah picking Obama over Hillary Clinton probably honestly surprised some people. Probably shouldn't have, but it probably did. Jim Clyburn endorsing Joe Biden probably didn't surprise anybody, but it mattered a lot in that election. So is there any endorsements in this election that are going to really matter? Probably not. Trump's been around for so long now. We're in season 9 of the Trump political show. Everybody pretty much has their opinions on Trump mapped out. That's one of the issues he has. He has a high floor with his base, but he has a low ceiling because you're not allowed to be neutral with Donald Trump. His supporters and he himself will not let you be. And maybe that's part of an endorsement as well. If you can't leave the neutrals and normies alone, maybe they do start listening to a celebrity that otherwise they wouldn't listen to their politics. Maybe they do listen to somebody they normally wouldn't want to because they don't follow politics all the time, as we covered on other programs. Those, what they need to stop calling low information voters, but I'm open to a better name for them. If they're not paying attention all the time, maybe they do take Taylor Swift's word for it or a talking head's word for it. Maybe that's the world we live in now. So does endorsements really matter? Answer is like a lot of things in politics. It depends. But you need to understand the context and discern the times we live in that endorsements have changed because we've changed. People have changed. The celebrities have changed. They're all online. And we've changed. We're all online. If you can't do anything on Facebook from your yard to your kids to anything without everybody on your Facebook knowing about it, think about that in political terms. Folks probably know how you're voting already. So does endorsements really matter to you? That's up to you. Do they matter to the larger political process? Not that much. It's just the new world we live in. It's not that I'm endorsing it. It's just how it is.
All the music on Her Tell is provided under a Creative Content license from MonsterCat.com.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.